When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Dylan was—he was a revolutionary, man. The way that Elvis freed your body, Bob freed your mind.
This is Bob Dylan, about man and God and law.
Come and listen for a moment, lads, and hear me tell my tale. How across the sea from. Condemned to sail, by the jury found me guilty. Then says the judge, says he, for life Jim Jones, I'm sending you across the stormy sea.
Over a career lasting almost as long as Bob Dylan's, Greil Marcus has become one of America's most prominent cultural critics by extending his rock interests into literature, politics, history, religion, and art. But Greil's greatest contribution over many books, articles, and public conversations, two of which I was honored to facilitate myself, is his work on Bob Dylan. Invisible Republic, Bob Dylan's basement tapes, now titled The Old Weird America, The World of Bob Dylan's Basement Tapes, mines Dylan's musical mythology of America. It's not only the greatest book ever written about Bob Dylan, not by Bob Dylan. It may be the greatest book ever written about rock and roll.
Soldiers on a convict ship, were 500 strong. Oh, they opened fire and somehow drew that pirate ship away. But I'd rather have joined that pirate ship than gone to Botany Bay.
In his 1998 review of Invisible Republic in The Scent, Bob Dylan's resident historian, Sean Wilentz, yes, that's an actual job, you can look it up. Wilentz wrote that, quote, "The critic and the artist have locked into some strange empathetic communication. Either Marcus has been reading Dylan's mind, or Dylan has read Marcus's book, or maybe both things have happened. Whatever the case, Invisible Republic ranks as the most brilliant study of Dylan's work to date," unquote. 20 years later, with the release of Greil Marcus's Folk Music, a Bob Dylan biography in Seven Songs, Wilentz still may be right, though this new book may surpass even The Invisible Republic.
I must feel dishonored grave, but it's by and by I'll slip my chains into the bush I'll go, and I'll join the brave bush rangers there, Jack Donahue.
This is not to say that Greil Marcus toils alone in a field that he has in many ways defined, but the field of digging into Dylan with the same toolkit one would bring to words and art of greatest esteem is now, in many ways, thanks to Greil Marcus, an approach for making meaning of culture that applies to everything, from masters like Dylan to schlock television to comic books to Duran Duran. The history of how critics and commentators make sense of history and myth and intertextuality in art goes back to Greco-Roman and biblical rabbinical traditions. If you've listened to the 30-plus episodes of this podcast, you know that that's where I find some of the most important antecedents for exploring rock and roll. I call it rock and roll midrash, That's the art of interpreting sacred texts at the heart of all biblical commentary, the New Testament, and even the Quran, rock and roll. That's our particular favorite set of sacred texts here, but this midrashic vision applies to everything. For understanding art, especially art that relies upon words, Midrash always comes down to text and context. Text and context. It's in choosing what those terms mean and how to apply them to Dylan or Duran Duran or Saved by the Bell that determines what one has to say about Dylan, how you hear him, and what good listeners can bring back to the very music that they love. Akin to what the scholar Eric Auerbach taught in his touchstone post-war essay Mimesis, written in a jail cell about the Odyssey, a canonical classic of all classics Dylan himself cited in his Nobel Prize speech, and the biblical story of the near murder of Isaac when God said to Abraham, "Kill me a son." Well, Auerbach's suggestion is that we need to hear Dylan's work, like any work, as fraught with background. That's Auerbach's term. Beyond rich immersion of just being with the music, being with the text, the critical listener seeks out those places where Dylan's work demands commentary and the weaving of a web of imaginative, sometimes unexpected interpretations in order to enter that fraught background and to hold the text in new ways. This is an obligation of the careful listener. Text and context.
No more auction block for me. No more, no more. No more auction block for me. Many
Bob Dylan's story is, in one sense, the story of his texts, lyrical, musical, performative. That's his art. That's the story of his genius, the story that resulted in his winning that Nobel Prize for Literature in 2016. And it is a textual story. But then there are the layers of Dylan and his work that are fraught with background. And that's how Marcus hears Dylan. This is the context, the ways in which Bob Dylan is a creative vessel for the world, seen and unseen, which he, as an artist, serves.
No more driver's lash for me. No more, no more. No more driver's lash.
Now, this engine of seeking out context, the unsung, unspoken, unrevealed place of a song in the world, the fraught background of Dylan's work, doesn't necessarily jibe with the concept of writing a biography. And Greil talks about this potential conflict in his preface to Folk Music, a Bob Dylan biography, in 7 songs. He's not interested in the text of a biography, which he covers in a brief page or two at the book's launch. No Clinton Halen's obsessions with what Dylan did when, every day for decades. No master thieves trying to pin a lyric to a lover or a building or a family conflict or a war. Marcus wants to stream in and out of the text of songs to color a context he imagines for those very texts.
How many roads must a man walk down before you call him a man? How many seas must the white dove sail before she sleeps in the sand. Yes, and how many times must the cannonballs fly before they're forever banned? The answer, my friend, is blowing in the wind. The answer is blowing in the wind.
This is the associative art of Midrash, of reimagining received content. And as such, even as his work has made rock commentary credible, legitimate, Greil's approach is also deeply countercultural. We live in an age where glossy rock biopics and memoirs have flooded the music and entertainment market. Ray Charles and Aretha Franklin and Freddie Mercury were not long dead before they were given their halos and their hagiographies. Elton John and Motley Crue didn't have to wait. Dylan, in contrast, allowed Todd Haynes a free hand to scramble history and myth in I'm Not There. 10 points for Dylan Dorr for messing with linear conventions. Though sadly, it looks like a mainstreamy Dylan biopic starring Timothy Chalamet is on the horizon. Now, this might wreck my theory, just like fake signatures on books or paintings or selling songwriting licenses for hundreds of millions of dollars dented Dylan's credibility for others. Dylan on screen a la Hayes, however. He had black, white, young, old, male, and female faces. And so too does Greil Marcus's biography. In fact, this multitude of faces, personae that Dylan inhabits. This is core to the case Marcus makes as biography.
In the wind, the answer is blowing in the wind.
The more Dylan is there as an artist, well, the more he's not. As for rock and roll memoirs, we talked about the fragmented, borrowed, at times inscrutable scramble of Tarantula and Chronicles Volume 1 last episode. And dear Lord, the model of the rock memoir redemption story is as simple to follow and boring to witness as watching a Marvel film, from Black Panther to Ant-Man. Same story, different costume, another $300 million spent and billions more made on the arc of myth, and then killing it with fart jokes or Botox or military secret style special effects to animate and deaden the myth. Rockers in their memoirs discover their gifts as wunderkinds and bang away until seeming overnight success, ruling the world, being famous, taking drugs, getting lost, and then they either never come back or find redemption with younger spouses and greatest hits. You just have to rearrange their faces and give them all another name. VH1's Behind the Music, forever on repeat. Somehow, amazingly, we enjoy this stuff, and I don't know exactly why.
No more auction block for me. No more.
Dylan doesn't like playing to cliches in his text or his context.
No more auction block for me.
Neither does Greil Marcus, and this is what we're here to talk about. Dylan's texts and contexts through the eyes of his most esteemed listener.
No more driver's lash for me. No more, no more.
The way I walk is just the way I walk.
It's time for another notch in the holster of Bob Dylan Book Month, and it's been quite a long month, months of months. Dylan and Roth, Tarantula and Chronicles, and now we are asking the question that any inquiring Dylan mind wants to know. Why does the work of Greil Marcus matter? Not just for an enlightened approach to hearing Dylan, but in what art means in our world. Not only how to hear or see Dylan or art, but how to follow the hints within the world that maybe even the artists don't know they are teaching us about. And in this way, to go beyond the text and into context and back again, to take music in particular as seriously and joyously as any religious or sacred text, and to build a world with it at a time when the world needs myths, uncheapened and unsweetened by the accepted tropes of pop culture, in order to get us to what's next. I'm your host, Dr. Stephen Daniel Arnoff. Welcome. Welcome to Chapter 7 of Season 3 of Bob Dylan About Man and God and Law. Context. Why Greil Marcus matters.
Love me right. Love me morning, noon, and night.
Pantheon podcast listeners, Christian Swain here to tell you more about my experience with Raycon earbuds. Our family now has three pairs of Raycon earbuds around the house, and my wife just grabbed a pair of the Headphone Pros to replace some headphones from a company that was double the price. And yes, she loves them. Now, if you haven't pulled the trigger on a pair of Raycons, or even if you have but you're in the market for another pair because they're just that good, well, now is the time to check them out. Because they just launched their upgraded model of the best-selling everyday earbuds. With Raycon's upgraded everyday earbuds, now you also get active noise cancellation, ergonomic design, and multi-point connectivity that lets you pair with two devices at once. New quick charge function, three customizable sound styles, plus awareness mode. Available in a variety of vibrant new colors to complement any and all skin tones. I even have a pair of earbuds in a cool green color. I have tried just about every earbud known to humankind, and these Raycons are fantastic. Seriously, if you've been wanting to check out Raycons, there truly is no better time. You're going to ask yourself why you didn't check them out sooner, and Raycon offers a 30-day happiness guarantee. So, what are you waiting for? Go to buyraycon.com/pantheon today to get 20% off your Raycon order, plus free shipping. That's right, you'll get 20% off and free shipping at buyraycon.com/pantheon. buyraycon.com/pantheon.
Bruce Springsteen, who I love, despite the often flat work of much of the last few decades, he never got back the bones of what makes him great because he believed in his own myth too much. Tom Waits never left the bones of what made him great. In that crazy corner, he rattles them like no one else. Paul Simon lost the vulnerability. Joni Mitchell outsmoked her voice and out-Joni'd her legacy, even if she's making a late run for it now. Neil Young just isn't very interesting musically anymore, and none of them, not one, has had the kind of attention that Dylan has received. Not one has had a Boswell the way that Dylan has had Greil Marcus. Much like Dylan wrote and recorded an album in relationship to the Vietnam War without mentioning it in the form of John Wesley Harding, Greil Marcus wrote his first book about Dylan without a single chapter in the man's name. The opening lines of Mystery Train serve as a kind of foreshadowing of the work of Marcus's career. Words written nearly 50 years ago in Berkeley, California, dated August 9, 1974. They tell it like it was. Tell it like it is. Maybe they tell it like it will be, too. He wrote, "Writing these opening notes reminds me of the prefaces to the American history books that were written during World War II, when the authors, looking back for the meaning of the revolution of the Civil War, or whatever, drew modest but determined parallels between their work and the struggle. They were affirming that their work was part of that struggle, that the attempt to understand America was up for grabs. Those writers were also saying, at least this is what they now say to me, that to do one's most personal work in a time of public crisis is an honest, legitimate, paradoxically democratic act of common faith, that one keeps faith with one's community by offering whatever it is that one has to say. I mean that those writers were exhilarated 30 years ago by something we can only call patriotism and humbled by it too. While I feel some kinship with those writers, I began this book in the fall of 1972 and finished it late in the summer of 1974. Inevitably, it reflects, and I hope contains, the peculiar moods of those times when the country came face to face with an obscene perversion of itself that could be neither accepted nor destroyed. Moods of rage, excitement, loneliness, fatalism, desire.
When first unto this country a stranger I came, I courted a fair maiden, and she was her name. I courted her for love, and her love I didn't obtain. Do you think I've any reason or right to complain?
Bob Dylan travels on that mystery train of Mystery Train, Greil Marcus's first book, like a ghost. Like the musical ghosts that populate every single one of Greil Marcus's books. He writes in Folk Music, his unmatched feel for the mysteries of American song, Marcus says of Dylan, in one of the few direct references to him. But it's only in the notes section on The Band. And though he's written of punk, Van Morrison, F. Scott Fitzgerald, The Doors, Bill Clinton, and Elvis, and a full array of American literary and pop prophetic voices, he always comes back to Dylan. Even when you think he's not there, he's there. And there's someone else there too. Maybe it's obvious to us now. But it wasn't always.
Oh, Superman. Oh, Mom and Dad. Mom and Dad.
What Greil Marcus's work gives license to rock critique parallels what his mentor Pauline Kael gave to film, or Joan Didion to culture, or Hunter S. Thompson to politics. It's personal. He, Marcus, the critic, is always there with the artist, and the more personal the critic can be without making the critique about the critic, the better we can find ourselves in the work she's talking about. We are there because she is there. Now, there are a million good reasons why rock and roll creates intimacy, but the industry of rock thrives on making myths personal. The great critics are part of this. They are there so that we can go deeper into being there too.
Hello? This is your mother. Are you there? Are you coming home?
The personal. The folk music is full of beautiful, seemingly personal moments. And one that stopped me dead in my tracks and still keeps me lingering is a quote from Machiavelli, of all people. I probably should have known this quote before, but I didn't. And here, Marcus describes Bob Dylan in the, quote, monastery of folk. That's Greil's phrase. But he's also clearly speaking of himself in the most personal of ways, about that feel like Keith Richards and Tom Waits's song of the same name, that feel of intellectual, emotional, spiritual communion. The context is Machiavelli exiled from his beloved Florence toward the end of his life when he writes a letter to his friend Francesco Vittori. Machiavelli, the 15th, 16th century Italian diplomat and philosopher known universally as a teacher of the anything-goes use of power that autocrats have employed since time immemorial, and who said that politics have no relation to morals. Well, here Machiavelli throws down the watchword of what it means to experience one's work and self within tradition. Now, that's the context. Here's the text. Once the evening has arrived, I come home and enter my study. In the entryway, I take off my daytime clothing, covered with mud and dirt, and put on garments that are royal and suitable for a court. Changed into suitable clothes, I step into the ancient courts of ancient men, received lovingly by them. I nourish myself on the food that is mine, for which I was born. There I am unashamed to talk with them and ask them the reasons for their actions. And they, their humanity, answer.
Williams and Senior killed a poor who had a carol with the cane that he twirled. Now his diamond ring finger at a Baltimore hotel. Society gathered and the cops were called in and his weapon took from him as they rode him in custody down to the station and booked Williams and Singer for first degree.
This is what it means to be a listener and also to be a critic whose critique is not just artful but art in and of itself. This immersion into the worlds of tradition. This is the kind of listening both Dylan and Marcus share. Yes, it's personal, and yes, it's political. So Machiavelli is actually apropos, political and personal. Personal and political. They mix each other up all the time in Marcus's work. Dylan's Blind Willie McTell, or The Lonesome Death of Hattie Carroll, or even Blown in the Wind, withstanding. When it comes to the obligation of a music lover to witness, to ally, perhaps even more than Dylan, Marcus is always wrestling with issues of race in America. If Dylan said in Chronicles Volume 1 that the Civil War was where America died on a cross and was resurrected, and that this is the crux through which everything Dylan writes, the same might be true of Greil Marcus. He was there with Sly and the Family Stone's rage in Mystery Train, and he's written empathetically and emphatically about the impossibilities of American politics, which means race, ever since.
Come gather round, people, wherever you roam, and admit that the waters around you have grown, and accept it that soon you'll be drenched to the bone. If your time to you is worth saving, then you better start swimming or you'll sink like a stone, for the times they are a-changing.
Marcus is much loved in Europe, but his political heart is clearly in America and the American story of both mythic politics, that invisible republic, and the scars of its embedded injustices. It was humbling to hear not only how songs mark history, he writes in Folk Music, or even make it, but become part of its fabric or part of the flag. For whatever you can hear the song sang, one in rage and disgust, the other from a calm distance, that might be worth.
I'm a worried man with a worried mind. No one in front of me and nothing behind. There's a woman on my lap and she's drinking champagne.
If Dylan puts on the face of, quote, someone trying on the role of someone who didn't care, unquote, in the song Things Have Changed, which won him a Academy Award from the chapter on Bob Dylan's Times They Are Changin', Marcus doesn't want to escape the grind of American political promise. He does not want to try on the role of someone who didn't care. It's personal. All politics is personal. In context of the murder of George Floyd, Marcus quotes Minnesota politician Ruth Richardson, who said that our systems are working the way they were designed to work. She means oppression. She means racism. She means 400 years of racism writing political policy. But somehow, in that context, from John Edwards to Thomas Paine to Abraham Lincoln to MLK, Marcus can't give up on the possibility that somewhere underneath the evidence of a country forever writhing on the cross of race, there are plain spoken truths, often spoken by musicians, that will put it down and pull it down to the ground for healing. It is always about justice in the politics of Greil Marcus's books, progressive, aspirational, discontented, but awed by the possibility that after the personal, which is always political, both the personal and the political are also mythic. And the drive toward a kind of redemption, despite the endless refrain of Robert Johnson's terrors in the night and the riot going on under our noses, there is a possibility that things might change.
People are crazy, times are strange. I'm locked in time, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things are...
And change, thinking about it, dreaming about it, wondering about it, why it didn't happen, if the times are changing at all, or if they're always the same, that's a mythic question. A personal political mythic question, and this is something that rock and roll nailed in the golden era, this ability to think big and small, mythic and personal, political. And rock being mythic is in no small part thanks to writers like Marcus who raise it up. Now, there are a lot of rungs on the ladder of rock and roll myth. It spans from the managers and publicists of the age creating rock and roll mythologies to the acceptance and experience of rock and roll as being a kind of sacred text. What is its myth? What is its weave of stories that explain the unexplainable? That's what myths do. Explain the unexplainable. Bring magic down to something that has a kind of cause and effect to it. It explains, myth does, how we see the world and how we feel through a shared narrative to hold individual and communal experiences together. Rock does this. That's its intimacy and its mythology. And it still does this for those who continue to believe. And rock critics like Marcus have a free, associative approach that's willing to stretch a lyric or a riff until it nearly breaks before bringing it back to base. But Greil Marcus's take implies that the code breakers for solving the myth of America are its music makers. Novelists and filmmakers and artists have a place in this story, but the barometer of the American soul is its musicians. Like Bob Dylan in Murder Most Foul, the last of the seven songs to be explored in this book. Marcus believes in the songs and the singers. If the shuffle of songs hits its stride right, abiding truth will come. But in order for that to happen, both we and they have to listen. You can hear when Odetta sings the song he writes in the chapter on Blown in the Wind, based on the song No More Auction Block, as heard perhaps most cogently by Dylan in Odetta's version. She sings slowly, seems almost to stop, insisting that each word in the song symbolizes a story too vast to really tell. Marcus speaks of Dylan's, quote, quest to find a place for someone walking with a toothache in his heel, in pages of riffs on the oldest American song tropes from Jim Crow and Dan Tucker, from minstrelsy, Love and Theft. He calls his book, his work, a book of cigarette butts, as a play on the overbearing, unimaginative Dylanology of A.J. Weberman, trying to overread everything into what is overheard in both Dylan's life and his work. So is Greil Marcus's personal, political, mystic reading of Dylan overreading too? Is his hearing overhearing too much? What should we hear? And why does it matter? There is a softness and vulnerability to this book that grounds the hearing and reading in something relatable, not just for the readers, but I'm guessing for Dylan himself somehow. Here, that groundedness mixes with the grandeur in two particular faces throughout the course of the book. The first is death. This is, in so many ways, a book about death. It's a kind of elegy. Time after time, Marcus notes when a subject mentioned even in passing has passed. They die old or young, naturally or too soon, and there's no real pattern to the deaths, only that he notes in nearly every case, nearly every figure cited, when and at what age they died. Maybe it's because Marcus himself is getting older, and he's also noted publicly that he struggled with medical issues for the year that bumped up into the writing of this book. Now, he covers more than 150 years of folk music in folk music, but each main figure is cited as a kind of end of his or her own era. And the book ends wondering, sadly, wistfully, longingly, about what happens when Dylan himself is gone. What happens to his era? The second element, alongside the element of mortality, that second face, which I discovered in my own writing about Dylan in my book, is an engine of empathy, that's Greil's term, that drives the writing of the book and ultimately drives Dylan's music. A world gathering around a campfire of unanswerable questions, and it takes everyone around the campfire to hear the whole song, he writes. Bob Dylan was living his life as much as a medium as he was a songwriter, he writes. Somewhere between the public and the private is this. The music has to come from within, yes, but you have to play it right. That's Little Brother Montgomery, quoted by Marcus, saying that. But Dylan and Marcus might have said it too. There's something very rock and roll about our great writers and poets leaving everything on the field at the end of a project, an album, a show. I have said everything I possibly can. It's my last testament. Mic drop. Folk music reads like this kind of soft elegy in many ways. For Dylan as a figure who is both of and who makes his times, but also as Marcus on Marcus, generating in many ways the most precise, generous, and open-ended writing of his career. The empathy he finds in Dylan is reflected in the open-hearted voice he offers to his readers too. So, Greil Marcus, he wrote a biography underneath history, in which facts are stepping stones for what really matter. Justice, empathy, creativity, mortality, humility, daring, listening. Rather than a last testament for the author or its subject, it's a kind of invitation to the reader and listener to pull up a chair and stay lit in something like a musical forever, just to hear what happens, and to take comfort and joy in that invitation, and powered by that engine of empathy, to be in good company while you do it. As Leonard Cohen once sang, we are ugly, but we have the music. Now maybe that's all we've got. This invitation to listen and always find something new from an amazing listener, or two amazing listeners, Dylan and Marcus. But in rock and roll midrash, like this book and like these songs, that listening to music can lead us anywhere. And this is not a little. This is a lot. This has been Chapter 7 of Season 3 of About Man and God and Law. Thank you for joining us once again for Bob Dylan Book Month. This very long month continues with a discussion of Bob Dylan's book. It's only fitting. Bob Dylan, The Philosophy of Modern Song, is up next. You can find my book, About Man and God and Law, The Spiritual Wisdom of Bob Dylan, wherever fine books are sold. Visit mangodlaw.com for more information on upcoming events and other projects related to the book and the podcast. We are proud to be part of the Pantheon Podcast Network. Find all of the great podcasts for music lovers at pantheonpodcasts.com. I am your host, Dr. Stephen Daniel Arnoff. Thanks for coming. Take it away, Jeff. See you.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more Fantasy Points.